Issues Etc. regular guest Pastor Stephen Parks on why your congregation should join the Issues Etc. 300.
If I could, I'd just like to challenge any Lutheran pastors that are listening to consider becoming one of the congregations that supports Issues Etc. My own congregation is a very small church, and I know it can be difficult to try and budget $1,000 a year to become one of the Issues Etc. 300. But if you're being blessed by this, as I know you are, and if your congregation is being blessed by this, as I know that it is, I submit to bring it to the congregation to prayerfully consider supporting the outreach of Issues Etc., not only here in the United States, but also around the world. Thank you so much for what you do.
Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your congregation's mission or advertising budget. Simply go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc., the Issues Etc. 300.
My God, it's the ancient Illuminati thread.
500 years ago, a secret society discovered the true origin of life on Earth. It was a revelation so powerful, the church ordered a brutal massacre to silence them forever.
They've returned for their revenge.
Professor Langdon, can you help us?
From the author of The Da Vinci Code, Tom Hanks, in a Ron Howard film, Angels and Demons.
Well, that's the trailer for the new Dan Brown movie. The first one, of course, The Da Vinci Code, just took people by storm. First the book, then the movie. Tom Hanks appears in this next movie. I wonder, is there more or less revisionist history in Angels and Demons than in The Da Vinci Code? It's one of the things we're going to be talking about for the next half hour of Issues Etc. with Terry Mattingly of Scripps Howard News Service, Tuesday afternoon, May the 5th. Among the other things we'll discuss, we'll talk about the church and the media, postmodern nuns, Baptist spirituality, and modern exorcism. Terry Mattingly is director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He writes a weekly On Religion column for the Scripps Howard News Service, and he's author of the book Pop Goes Religion, a contributor to GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back.
Yeah, that sounded like a wild bunch of stuff.
Well, you've been writing.
When you put it all together,
it's an eclectic group of topics there. Beginning with Angels and Demons, is this more or less revisionist history from Dan Brown?
Well, there's some in it, in the sense that there's things claimed about the Illuminati that nobody really takes all that seriously. But when you're talking about basically throwing out the entire history of Western culture, Western civilization, morality, common law, and the Christian tradition, I mean, which, you know, the first book. Oh, and I forgot, and revising Judaism, too. Don't forget all those sex rituals going on inside the Holy of Holies, you know, in Judaism. I mean, so what did Da Vinci Code not try to trash or throw out? I mean, so, you know, it was just a laugh-out-loud, you know, riot of revisionism. The important thing people need to realize, especially if they're following the news bulletins right now, where Ron Howard is actually insisting that the new movie is, in his opinion, pro-Catholic, he's absolutely correct. In one sense, it is pro-liberal reformationist Catholic from his perspective, and it's anti-traditional doctrinal Catholic from his perspective. So it's pro some of the Catholics and anti some of the Catholics.
I wonder about Tom Hanks, who, as an actor, I greatly admire. I think he's made some excellent movies. He seems like he's got a good head on his shoulders for being a mega star. I wonder, does he believe any of this, given the fact that he starred in two of these movies now?
Well, I mean, I had a quote in my column, from the press events for it, where if you read it, Hanks just at one point was asked, "Punt blunt, do you buy any of this conspiracy stuff?" And he just says, "No." You know, the direct quote was, "Conspiracy theories, I think, are conjured up by people who can then sell their books about conspiracy theories." Anytime someone says, "You know how they did that? You know what that's about? You know what the conspiracy is?" I automatically tune the person out. Yeah, he was very consistent that he's not into these conspiracy theories himself and doesn't give them much credence.
So as far as we can tell, where does Angels and Demons take us in the saga that is Dan Brown's imaginary history and present for the Roman Catholic Church?
Well, it's critical to understand that this book in the series of books, the events in it occur before the Da Vinci Code. Yet the movie is being filmed as a sequel to the Da Vinci Code, which means that to some degree, everything in the book changes. I mean, everything that, you know, Brown that Brown paints about what Hanks' character, everything that he learned in the Da Vinci Code, he's supposed to now know in this plot, in this book. The Da Vinci Code is supposed to be looming in the background, you know, over the head, you know, of the know everything, go everywhere, I know it all, you know, Harvard professor, you know, that's the heart of all this. Robert Langdon, the all omnipresent, all competent, you know, Robert Langdon. So we're out of, it's hard to answer your question because you don't know whether to say that what happens in the book or what happens in the movie. Does that make sense? Because the book occurs at one place in the timeline and the movie occurs in another.
So Dan Brown has revised his own history in a sense, well, at least in the way he's ordered his telling of the story again.
Ron Howard has to be able to get another movie out of it. Yeah. I mean, so I would say that there's no evidence that Brown took part in the rewriting of his story. However, Ron Howard made it very clear that he'd made all these changes in the plot and in the framing of the book with the permission of Dan Brown. Does that make sense?
Yes, and it's an interesting irony. It really is. I mean, to have – I know that books get rewritten all the time for movies, but it's interesting to have the order – in some ways kind of a crucial order of sequence be taken out of Dan Brown's hands. How do you think
– Real quick, let me make one point. I did have a chance to ask Ron Howard if, in many ways, the central character of the religious theme of the book – which is a Catholic priest who is also a brilliant physicist at Stern. Did I get the right word there? In Geneva, you know, the physics place in Geneva, the super collider guys, CERN, CERN, CERN. So anyway, this guy is a Catholic priest. He is a super physicist at CERN. And he also happens to be the adopted father of the brilliant female who becomes the co-protagonist with Langdon this time around. That guy is not even in the movie. Ron Howard confirmed that for me. So in some degrees, the central figure of the book, when it comes to setting the plot in motion and the religious point of view of the book, that character is not even in the movie. So to some degree, we have to just say all bets are off until we see the film.
Reactions from the Vatican on Angels and Demons, as far as we can tell.
Right. Well, they're upset. They're still mad about Da Vinci Code, and they're not buying it when Howard says this is a pro-Catholic movie, and I think some members of the hierarchy will actually like it. I mean, after all, the book ends with a liberal pope being elected. I mean, so the book has a happy ending. The liberals win.
Turning to another subject, again, Roman Catholic, but with a lot more grounding in real history and reality. What did you think of the media coverage of Archbishop Charles Chaput's recent meeting with journalists in Washington, D.C.?
Well, I actually thought it was pretty good, in large part because this thing was held at the Pew Forum, which meant you had an exceptionally broad press corps representation of people that know what they're doing with religion in a kind of a controlled environment, knowing that their questions and their answers are going to be transcribed and put up on a website. So you've got everybody bringing their A game, yet also, to some degree, being on their best behavior, and you also have the Archbishop being able to give answers in which he knows those full answers will be available to the public who really care about it. So that, to me, is a best-case scenario. There's all kinds of people in the world of religion, you know, in all of the world religions, that I would love to see get to face the press under that kind of a circumstance. I think we'd learn a lot about the press and a lot about them. It was a very interesting encounter, and I would urge your listeners to head to TMET.net, look for the column headlined "Archbishop Meets the Press, Year 21," the 21st anniversary of my column, and actually follow the link to the Q&A and read the whole thing themselves.
Before we take our break here, did you get the sense that Charles Chaput gets the media as much as he hopes the media gets religion?
Well, he certainly has tried, and I've known him personally since before he was a bishop. I knew him when he was a Franciscan in downtown Denver, was active in campus ministry and a host of other subjects right there in the heart of downtown near the newspaper, the Rocky Mountain News, where I worked at that time. So I've actually known him and dialogued with him on media issues, for almost 25 years at this point. And this is the kind of guy that, when his archdiocese is in the national headlines because of the Columbine massacre, gets up and preaches a sermon on the Matrix. I mean, so I don't know if it's possible to say you have a hip archbishop or something like that. I don't think he would, he would probably roll his eyes at that. But you do have an archbishop here who's quite well read up on media trends and on pop culture. One of his first actions when he became Archbishop of Denver in the mid to late 90s was to hold one of the Catholic Church's first conventions or forums on the theological and doctrinal impact of the Internet. And so it's a guy that cares deeply about these issues.
We're talking with Terry Mattingly, director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He writes a weekly On Religion column for the Scripps Howard News Service. He's author of the book Pop Goes Religion and a contributor to GetReligion.org. Now, you could read Terry Mattingly's columns at issuesetc.org when you click on demand, issuesetc.org. We'll have 10 more minutes with Terry. We'll be talking a little bit more about the church and the media. How important is it that the Roman Catholic Church, especially in America, be as media savvy as it can possibly be able to deal with the press, especially for the foreseeable future? We'll talk about postmodern nuns, some of the female religious in the Catholic Church who've decided to move past Jesus as the primary metaphor for their spirituality. And we'll talk about Baptist spirituality, as time permits, perhaps even modern exorcism, with Terry Mattingly of Scripps Howard News Service. I'm Todd Wilkin. Stay tuned. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely upon you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support of Issues Etc.
Here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Help inform your fellow parishioners about Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Click promote and copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. We update this paragraph weekly. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Would you like to post your favorite Issues Etc. audio segments on your website or blog? Well, we've made it easy for you. Just go to the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, click the embed green logo, and copy and paste the embed code on your website or blog. It's just like posting a YouTube video. Embed Issues Etc. audio on your website or blog today. We love our on-demand listeners. Old theology, new technology. Issuesetc.org.
Thanks for sending us your email. Having produced Issues Etc. for more than 15 years, I can tell you that we've never received email response like this. Unfortunately, we simply can't reply to all of your email. So here's a way that I can almost guarantee a response to your question or comment. Call the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. It's available for your questions or comments 24/7, 618-223-8384.
8384.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Terry Mattingly is our guest. Tomorrow on the program, we'll talk to Dr. James White about the King James Only controversy. On the subject of the church and the media, Terry, how important is it that the church not only understand the media, but be able to employ it for its proper purpose in American society?
Well, I want to look at that two different ways. First of all, I think we need to actually concede that because of sheer numbers and because of the size of their social institutions, that in the immediate future, how the U.S. Catholic Church, how the Catholic Church in the United States of America stands up or doesn't stand up to the press and to some degree the government, other social institutions, the way the Catholic Church responds institutionally on moral issues and freedom of speech and freedom of association and other issues is absolutely critical in the next, shall we say, 8 years. So that's number one. Someone in the Catholic Church has to understand how all this is being covered by the press and the way the debate's being framed, or Christians in general in the United States are going to be in trouble. The Catholic Church is, at this point, that crucial. I'm referring to the size of their hospital chains, the size of their academic infrastructures, the number of Catholics who are in Congress, let alone the Supreme Court, I mean, et cetera, et cetera. These debates within Catholicism are absolutely critical. Okay, then now you go to the wider church, wider than the Catholic Church. Ever since the early 90s, when Dr. Haddon Robinson and I and some others were active in an attempt to get a seminary to take seriously issues of mass media at Denver Seminary, I've been arguing that simply you cannot do what classical faith would call apologetics. You cannot do apologetics in modern, postmodern, and post-postmodern America if you have no understanding of the way that entertainment and news media cover issues, frame issues, etc. Yet, I don't see too much evidence that the skill set of most religious leaders in America have changed that greatly.
What I see is they're willing to pay a pretty penny for some consultants, and they're willing to perhaps hire a PR person or a small staff, even middle-sized Protestant denominations. But it's mostly, we're going to put out a press release and just hope that someone picks it up and finds it important. Sounds like you don't think that's really enough for the church to deal through the media with the public.
Well, no. Once again, it presumes that public relations is the problem, as opposed to actual debate and dialogue. And I mean, at the moment, I don't even think the church is debating these issues in a way that reaches the people in their own pews. Forget the unchurched, and those outside. At the moment, we're not even talking to our own people in a language that they will understand most of the time.
You've written recently also about what you call postmodern nuns. You're going to have to explain this to me. They think of themselves as post-Christian. What's going on with these religious?
Well, once again, this is the division. These are the divisions inside American Catholicism. In the context of the column I'm going to write tonight, we'll get into this, and I guess I could hint at that slightly. I've just put up a post at getreligion.org today that talks about the fact that, in my opinion, there are four, based on an interview with some priests here, one priest in particular in Washington, I think there are at least four different kinds of Catholic voters, and thus at least four different kinds of Catholics in the United States. When the press talks about Catholics, American Catholics, they're actually talking about four different kinds of people. The postmodern nuns, it's crucial to understand how divided Catholics are. Among voters, I divide them into ex-Catholics, cultural Catholics who only go to church occasionally, Sunday morning American Catholics, often called cafeteria Catholics, which are kind of like mainline Protestants, liberal Lutherans, liberal Presbyterians, liberal Episcopalians, the kind of individual approach to deciding what is doctrine, etc. And then what this priest once called the sweat, the details, and goes to confession Catholics. And this is the smallest segment of the American Catholic Church, yet these are the people that actually back the doctrines and the teachings, you know, of their own faith. Now, when you're dealing with these nuns, you're actually dealing with groups competing or clashing groups of nuns inside of some orders and then between orders, traditional orders versus modernist orders, that are actually clashing over the, you know, the nature of Christianity, the nature of the Catholic witness, the nature of Catholic doctrine, whether the Catholic Church is right on critical issues of salvation and moral teachings, etc. So the postmodern nuns, a lot of this is getting attention because a speech that was given by a sister, Lori Brink, back in 2007, in which she talks very openly about different strategies for surviving or dying among the aging Catholic religious orders, she just gets very, very blunt and at one point talks about the sojourning nuns, the post-Christian nuns. And that's just one of her four options, but it's one that's certainly getting a lot of attention right now, and making, as you would imagine, traditionalist nuns and Catholics extremely upset. At the same time, she just writes off the traditionalist approach to Catholic faith, even though she admits it's the one that young women want to join. And that's the growing segment of nuns is the one that she just kind of dismisses.
Speaking of tradition, you've also written recently about an attempt on the part of a Baptist seminary to recapture some sense of spirituality. And this is a difficult thing, as you note, a cycle repeated generation after generation among some Protestants of seeking a spirituality that has nothing to do with tradition, form, ceremony, or the historic liturgy and life of the church.
Yeah, in other words, you want to go back to the ancient church, yet to some degree you're trying to jump over medieval Catholicism. That's what these men and these scholars would say they're doing. They're free church, low church Christians, Anabaptists, Congregationalists, etc. And they're trying to jump over medieval Catholicism and back to the ancient church. The problem, of course, is that, you know, the Jews of Jesus' day were in their own way liturgical, which means that you have ritual, you have liturgy, you have things that are in the earliest generations of the church. And, you know, here I am, this was kind of a personal column to me, in the sense that I grew up, you know, blue chip, five-star Southern Baptist, and now I'm a convert to Eastern Orthodoxy. So it was kind of interesting dialoguing with these men because, you know, they're aware historically that Martin Luther, and to a lesser extent Calvin, when it came time to critique Catholicism, Luther explicitly said that he was not rejecting the doctrines of the Church of the East. So he didn't see the same problems in Orthodoxy that he saw in medieval Catholicism. However, obviously, in the world of Free Church Protestantism, they got major problems with Orthodoxy too, right? Or for that matter, with Lutheranism. Or for that matter, with a lot of Calvin. Or let alone Anglicanism. So these cycles keep going. And like once a century, you have this movement to try to get back to the liturgy and the spirituality and the prayer of the early church, yet in a way that fits the doctrine of a post-liturgical, post-printing press dominated by preaching approach to Protestantism. Does that make sense?
Yeah, with only 30 seconds, what do you make of Lutherans who have Luther's legacy of what we would call a conservative Reformation, trying to retain the historic form of the church while ridding it of its abuses? Lutherans who are abandoning those very things and essentially aping Pentecostals for their spirituality. 30 seconds.
Well, that's, you're telling me they're Protestants. And to some degree, the tensions within Lutheranism between those who openly say, we're Protestants, we're evangelicals, deal with it, and those that are saying, is that what Luther really wanted? I think to some degree they're down to the old question whether Luther was a Lutheran.
Folks, when you purchase Terry Mattingly's book, Pop Goes Religion, using the Amazon.com link under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, a percentage of your purchase will help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. Issuesetc.org. Click On Demand and look for Pop Goes Religion by Terry Mattingly. Terry Mattingly is director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council of Christian Colleges and Universities. He writes a weekly column on religion for the Scripps Hour News Service, and he's author of the book Pop Goes Religion, a contributor to GetReligion.org. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
No problem. Glad to be here.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll discuss the King James Only controversy. James White will be our guest. Now, if you appreciate listening to Issues Etc., talk radio for the thinking Christian, consider making a tax-deductible gift. You can donate by check, make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio, and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. The address again, LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate to Issues Etc. online. Go to our website, issuesetc.org. And now you can even donate by using automatic withdrawal, issuesetc.org. Click Donate. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.